Museum of the Moving Image welcomes you to the Pinewood Dialogues Online, an archive of conversations with innovative creative figures in film, television, and digital media. Visit Museum of the Moving Image in New York City or online at www.movingimage.us.
Please welcome the winner of the Best Actress Award from the New York Film Critics Circle, Rachel Weisz. They're all glad that you lived through the ending.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Film, in the movie.
Yeah.
The movie.
She opens the curtains, everything's fine, right?
Yeah. I remember, actually, when the play originally came out, there was some complaint that that it was a happy ending. There were some critics who felt it should have, that she should have killed herself at the end. Make it true.
It's funny. It's like someone said to me that whenever women in movies make a bid for freedom, they have to die at the end,
right,
like Thelma and Louise.
Yeah,
like,
right,
you got to die at the end. So maybe it's more radical that she lives.
I think so. Yeah. So actually, the role was quite radical. I mean, just in the landscape of post-war drama in England, this character, a play that's so focused on a woman protagonist and on her desires was really unusual at the time. So could you talk about what drew you to doing this? I mean, I think we see on the screen, but what drew you to the project?
I think firstly to work with Terence Davies. Mm. In England, he's something of a cult director, so it was a big draw to work with him. And I'd actually never read the play or seen the play. I missed that day in school or something. But I just read the screenplay, which Terence had adapted from the play, and I was just very touched by this story of a woman who kind of falls apart in front of your eyes and. She knows that this love is impossible, that this person doesn't really love her. She has the intelligence to know that it's all wrong, but her heart is just broken, and she falls apart and loses her dignity. And I just thought it was a fascinating thing to explore.
Now, had you known Terence Davies before, or you met him just through this project?
Oh, no, I'd never met him before. Right. He doesn't go out much,
no.
I don't think. But, we met initially on the phone. It was a very low-budget film, and I live in New York, so there was no budget for him to... We spoke
right.
on the phone.
You couldn't fly you in for the rehearsal or the audition?
For a meeting.
Right,
No. It was nothing like that. So we just spoke on the phone, and I just read it, and I said, I really loved it, and I was a fan of his work. And I said, well, let me just... may I just sleep on it? Because, it's a commitment, to go there and go there into the character, I mean. And he said, yes, but will you do it? And I said, yeah, okay, yeah. And that was it. So it was something about his directness and passion. He couldn't possibly wait for me to sleep on it. So
well, he wouldn't have been able to sleep if you didn't.
Absolutely, and I couldn't put him through it. Yeah.
But he, the story I heard was that he had no idea. He had actually no idea who you are.
None at all.
And saw you, just happened to randomly see you on a movie, TV.
It was weird because Terence actually hasn't really seen any films in color. He stopped watching movies. No, quite seriously, when films went into color, he lost interest in them.
Right.
But he watches and re-watches black and white movies. But he'd been in a hotel somewhere,
right.
And a film had come on which he'd seen a few scenes from. I don't think the whole thing. It was a film called Swept from the Sea, which I made quite a while ago. And he just remembered the name of the film and the girl. There was a girl in it.
Right.
And so he said to the producer, I remember this film and it's called Swept from the Sea and there's a girl in it and she's who I want. And the producer went, oh, yeah, well, I mean, the producer knew who I was. So he said, yeah, she's called Rachel Weisz.
Oh, I think he said something like, do you know who this actress is? And the answer was like, you're the only person in the world who doesn't know.
Yeah, well, not the only person, but
right.
Yeah,
well,
in the
right,
film,
right.
I get maybe.
In the
know.
Film, I mean.
Yeah.
So what was it like working with him? You were here a number of years ago with The Constant Gardener and talked about how much you love that style of working, which is a very different kind of film. It's very improvisational and sort of moving around a lot, handheld. This is totally... Not quite the same. So what is it like?
I mean, this is literally the diametrically opposite situation from working with someone like Fernando Moraes on The Constant Gardener. Fernando, basically, it's more like being in a in a fly-on-the-wall documentary, in that the cameras take second place to the what's happening with the actors improvise, go wherever they like.
Yeah.
The cameras follow you around. It's like reportage style, and if you want more lights, you know, they'll get another light bulb. It's very kind of not... the film grammar is just very kind of loose and freestyle, I suppose.
Yeah.
Terrence is not like that.
No.
Terrence loves symmetry. Mm-hmm. It's very important to him. And the framing of things, and with the actor being completely symmetrical in the frame, is very important. I mean, one scene I remember particularly... I'm laughing now, but I wasn't laughing on the day. The scene where my husband comes in and finds out that I've been unfaithful. I'm on the phone to my lover. And so I when I read that scene, I'd imagined, you know, this is what my husband finds out. I'm being unfaithful. It's going to be a passionate scene. And we're going to, I don't know, I thought I'd be walking around the room and cry, I don't know, throwing things or something.
Right.
And he said, no, dear, you're going to be sitting on the bed with your back to the camera. And I said, what? He said, yes, you just sit on the bed with your back to the camera, and then you can just turn your neck. And that's the whole scene.
Right.
And I said, okay, but can I just try? No, dear, just sit. And I said, well, can I just try and get up just to see that it's wrong? No, dear. Basically, if I'd have stood up, he wouldn't have moved the camera with me. I would have been out of frame, and it would have been useless.
Right.
So he's very... precise about what he wants, and I think he was right. I think he was absolutely right. But I think what happened was sometimes there was like a fire in me about being constrained, which I think became the 1950s, because I have no idea how to act like someone in the 1950s. I wasn't right there, but something about the way he kept me constrained. I think maybe that, that's just my
No, but that's the tension theory. In the film, that these emotions are hidden.
Exactly.
You know, because you think about, why did this couple get married? You know, what drew them together? Like, did you...
Myself and Simon, my husband.
Yeah, right.
You know, that was a weird thing, because when I read it again, the fantasy one has of things is very different. I thought he was going to be a horrible, cold, mean, nasty husband. Yeah. Now, we didn't have any money for rehearsal, so we just filmed it. There was no rehearsal time to get to know what the actors were going to do. And so there in front of my eyes unfolded the loveliest husband. It was like, he was so empathic and sweet. And I mean, I don't know how everyone else felt, but I just thought, what a sweetie. And it made it so hard for me, because there I was just, you know, destroying his life. Yeah. So... I can't remember what your question was.
Well, just what it was like. No, that you answered it, even though you don't remember the question. Yeah, I think so. In terms of restraint, I mean, one thing I thought was, I think this is the first time we have a sex scene in a Terrence Davies film.
Yeah.
You know, and he's even said in interviews that he doesn't even have sex, that he's celibate. But
yes.
And he's certainly never filmed a sex scene. So what was that like?
Well, he was excruciatingly embarrassed. I mean, he was so embarrassed. He coat on, even though we were inside. But he was very, again, you know, he knew exactly that he wanted this. There was this special camera arm that actually kept breaking down that day, and we had to get sent for a new one because there wasn't money to have two, etc.
Right.
And the camera did this. That's where it does a 360 spinning.
Yes.
So he had in his mind the exact way he wanted to film it. And I, in the morning, said, you know, maybe I just keep a slip on. You know, do you call it a slip in England? Like a little nighty thing, nightdress thing. You know, maybe they...
Right.
I don't know. I was trying to get out of taking my clothes off, I guess. And he said, no, dear. No. You're to be naked. And it was very important to him. Actually, a lot of people have asked me, when I lick Freddie's shoulder, was that improv? Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Terrence, lick his shoulder. Yeah, he's incredibly precise about everything, which is it's fascinating, really.
What was the atmosphere on the set like? Because it has this intensity and precision, yet it was a 25-day, it was a very fast shoot. You didn't have much time at all, so, but you maintain this intensity. Just what was it like?
I guess easier to maintain it for 25 days than 600 days. But the atmosphere was, it was very, very passionate. Everyone was there because they felt passionately about working with Terrence and about telling the story. It wasn't doom and gloom. It was, I think we had a lot of laughs, and Terrence can be extraordinarily funny. He talks a lot about his mother, who I think passed away, was it 40 years ago? Or does it, someone here? I don't know. Many years ago.
You would know.
How many years ago? Only 10 years ago? Oh, so it's much, it is fresh, because fresher than he would then often talk about his mother and then cry, really cry. And he's an incredibly emotional person. So I guess he sets a mood. I mean, if you were here now, he would be laughing and then maybe cry. He's just very emotional. He goes to the peaks and the troughs with great speed. So it was a very emotional set. So I guess he created a set where passions were unbridled. Can you say that? Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know what they'd be like if they were bridled, but.
Well, what was it like playing this role? I mean, we did a program when The Whistleblower came out, and we did an overview of your career, and we called it I think Passion and Purpose, because so many of your characters are. You were there.
Was I there?
Yeah, because it must have been a very memorable evening.
With
The Whistleblower.
Oh, with The Whistleblower.
Yeah, it was great.
Sorry.
So anyhow, just this idea, you often play characters who have very strong passion, whether it's different ways. So what was this role like to play for you?
Well, I guess it's more interesting. There are lots of different roles to play, but I guess it's more interesting to me to play someone passionate than unpassionate.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm trying to think, could it be interesting to be unpassionate, dispassionate? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
I think The Whistleblower and The Constant Gardener, I guess, they're women who are very passionate about politics.
Yeah.
You know, there's a cause that they have. This Hester is, her passion is a man, is love. And I don't really have a hierarchy that one's politics is better than a man or a man's. But I don't know, they're both interesting to me.
She was sort of political before. I mean, this was before the women's movement in a way.
Hester,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, feminism doesn't exist as a concept or a word or a notion. She's just behaving on instinct, and she's being ostracized for what she's doing, but she's not part of a... She's completely apolitical as a person, which I like about her.
I want to ask you just one thing and then open it up to the audience, but I think Tom Hiddleston is really an extraordinary actor. And
amazing.
Could you talk about working with him?
I mean, luckily, we just really immediately hit it off. He's very open, very daring, very brave, very bold, very, very bright, gorgeous. we had a really great working relationship. We wouldn't go and sort of go and hang out in the evenings after work, because it was like a little bubble. It was the world where, we both had to really... emotionally undress every day.
Yeah.
So it was a really wonderful working relationship. I loved working with him.
Oh, great. Okay. Let's open it up. I'll repeat, just to make sure people can hear, right over here. Yeah.
I just have there's one scene, you're about to kill yourself by jumping in front of a train. And there's a lot of flashing and wind. And at the same time, you're just doing a mind meld.
Yeah, well, he's asking about this scene in the train station where you're about to kill yourself.
And the fact that there was no train there, and so I had to imagine it. I suppose, as an actor, I wish I could come up with something really clever and interesting to say, but I have to imagine all sorts of things. Sometimes I imagine I'm American. I imagine I'm a doctor, or a scientist, which to me is like, I still add up on my fingers. So it's like, I have to imagine all sorts of things. So to imagine that happening is just, I don't know, it's just, I just imagine it. I guess it being an actor is just like being a kid. If you ask a little kid to imagine something, they find it really easy. I think actors, we just keep that childish thing going. Yeah. I haven't had any experience with suicide or trains or anything. So it was just, it's just imagination. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you talk much? I mean, this is maybe an American style of like getting a lot of backstory. Do you do that? Do you have those sort of discussions?
No.
Or you just, Terrence just told you what to do. And
Terrence had told me he didn't tell me. I mean, right. He would physically place me somewhere within the frame. And then emotionally, I had the world to travel.
Yeah.
But I just was physically placed somewhere. Did we talk about backstory? No, we didn't. We did. There was one line which I really fought hard to put into the film, which I can't remember if it was in the play, if that's where I got the idea from. But I kept saying a contemporary audience is going to, or I kept asking, why haven't they had a child? Why haven't they had a child? Why haven't they had a child? What is it? What is it?
Yeah.
Can they not? Do they not have sex? You know, what is it? So just there's a line where Simon Russell Beale's character says, would it have made a difference if we'd had a child? Just so that you know that they're thinking
that
it came up.
Yeah.
So that was, in terms of backstory, the only thing that worried me is was the no one mentioning the childlessness.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. More questions? Right here. How are you able to cry?
The anxiety you sometimes have is, what if it doesn't come? What if it? I have this scene to do today, and it says in the script, Hester completely breaks down by the fireplace, and you think, oh God, what if I can't? What happens is, with great writing, and I think this is great writing, like, your character and your story has been mapped out in really complex, deep, deep ways. And we shot it on the last, right, almost at the last day, so I've been living her story for 14 hours a day for 24 days. So at that point, when the director says action, you just think it's true. I just believe it. And then when he says cut, I stop believing it. And that sounds kind of like I'm not really answering the question. If it's not great writing, if it's kind of, if there's not much for you to get inspired by, then it's hard. Then it's hard. Then you think, fuck, am I going to cry? But if it's great writing, the story, I'm moved by it. I'm moved by the story, I guess.
Okay. I can't see if there's any in the back, but go ahead, up there. Yeah.
Me?
Yes.
Can you hear me from up here?
Yes, yeah. Pretty well.
You mentioned before how the director wanted like a calm type of acting. Like, you emote your feelings out that much. Like, you were expecting to, I'm sure some of us were expecting people to yell out of anger and frustration, but all of you maintain this kind of calm composure of that movie. How long did it take you to kind of put yourself in that mindset when there were emotional scenes to kind of remain calm like you wanted them to be?
So he's asking about the very like sort of restrained acting style that you had to play, that it was both.
Well, I didn't really feel calm. I think in England we call it being stoic, which is something which I'm not very good at in real life. But it's, I think part of British culture, particularly back in the 50s, you know, British people are much more shy of being very emotional and very, you know, I think it's a cultural thing. So I understood what Terrence wanted. If Terrence hadn't been there, I would have let go much more, and perhaps it would have been very wrong and too contemporary feeling. But underneath this seemingly calm thing, I wasn't feeling calm. I don't know how long it got. I mean, almost immediately, if you're being still and you can't move around, then you immediately I felt I was in it.
What about the line? Like, there's a territory that film explores about the line between madness and love, like, which is a, sort of a fine line. Like, it reminds me of certain Martin Scorsese characters, like I thought of The Age of Innocence, or a character who just has such a fixed, we can say, passion or obsession or whatever. And there were people who said that Hester was mad, but she's really not. But she's extreme.
Yeah, I don't think she's mad. I think it's a valid interpretation. I don't think she's mad. I think she's in love.
Yeah.
Very, very in love. But there are people who think that love is a kind of psychosis, and they're allowed to think that too. But I don't think she's mad, no.
Yeah.
No, I think she's just completely in love. Yeah.
They're just each looking for something different. I mean, that's sort of the tragedy of the film. Like, each of those three people just wants something different.
They're not suited for each other. Yeah.
Okay, take a few more over here, back there. The red? Yeah, sure. Okay, so what is it like working in a period piece for you?
In a way, it doesn't really matter to me what, you know, I did a film that was, I think it was 4th century.
Agora?
Yeah, I think it's 4th century. I've forgotten the exact date, a long time ago. And, you know, this is 1950 something. And I think my job as an actor is just to make the character feel like they're alive. And so when you watch someone on a screen, you want to feel like they're alive. They're not acting. They're not. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like you're watching real life. I think costumes make you behave differently and give a sense of period. And as I kind of have said a lot now, I suppose, is that I think Terrence, by making everything so still, created something that didn't feel modern. There's something about the stillness that I think, would you agree, feels not modern or not?
Well, the atmosphere is interesting that he creates. I mean, that he, you know, what's interesting about this film is that it's, about the atmosphere is that it's not, his films never feel realistic, but there's a way still this feels very, there's a sort of grittiness to it that he achieves, but it still is in this sort of unreal territory, you know, that he always does, always is able to achieve. But I wonder if the period helped you, sort of those costumes and that setting helped you find your character. Like, do you work from the outside ever? Were all the trappings of the character and the plays help you find the emotions?
Not so much. Yeah. Shoes are important. A lot of actors say that, I think. Yeah. Shoes are important. You've got to feel right. I don't know how these make me feel, but very
tall.
They're getting so high, shoes these days.
Okay, over here.
Have you ever worked with Simon Russell Beale on stage? And if not, do you have any plans to do so?
Oh, have you worked with Simon Russell Beale on stage?
No, I haven't. I've just sat in the audience many, many times and watched him. He's an amazing actor. No plans to, but very open to any offers. Yeah.
Over here?
If you were talking about how Terrence Davies seemed to know exactly what he wanted visually, were there things that he did experiment with on set?
Were there things that Terrence Davies experimented with on set, even though he knew what he wanted? Yeah, sometimes he would check. He didn't have a storyboard. God forbid. But there was no storyboard, but I think there were days when he would say, oh, the experimenting for Terrence would be putting the camera somewhere and saying that it's not in the right place. And it's just an emotional thing for him. He'd look, he doesn't have a, does he have a monitor sometimes? I can't remember. But anyway, he'd look at the frame and say, it's not right. And they keep moving it, and he'd go, oh, yes, there it's right. So he would experiment with how it felt. I wouldn't say he's wildly experimental, but he planned to shoot a sex scene with a revolving camera. So that, I mean, I think his, the filmmaking itself is very experimental. The way he puts a movie together and the way in which you describe is kind of heightened, sort of like artifice. I don't know. You'll do a better job than me explaining.
I read a story though where his cameraman would, you know, like he would come over and move the camera like a fraction of a millimeter, and the cameraman would say, "Does that make any difference at all?" And he was convinced it did, and I'm sure it did.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm sure.
Over here. So you're saying you work with Terrence Malick, who he says has a free-flowing directorial style. Like, is there a certain style that you prefer to work with?
Actually, his directing style isn't free-flowing, Terrence Malick. I mean, I worked for 5 days with him, and I did it because I'm a huge fan of his work, and I got the experience of seeing how he worked, at least on this film. It's actually often very, very, very technical. I wouldn't really exactly call it freedom. I don't know how much you want me to go into it, but... Oh, okay, in general, sorry. It was a very particular experience with Terrence Malick. Really interesting, quite bizarre. No, really, really unusual. But what do I prefer? I prefer freedom. But I don't think that necessarily makes my performance better. But how could one not prefer to be free? You know, it's just a good feeling. I think Terrence Davies is a great director, and I think the way in which he directed me has made my performance much better. So I don't know which I choose.
For the film nerds here, can you tell us a detail about Terrence Malick and what was unusual about?
Well, for instance, I don't know if you, just on this film, he was experimenting with a camera facing this way, like a steady cam, and there'd be two actors. And he didn't want to do, a wide shot, two shot, two overs, close-ups, because that's bourgeois.
Boring, yeah.
Yeah, I guess.
Right.
So he got the actors to... pivot, keep pivoting.
Oh.
So one, you'd be walking with your face to the camera and then turning and bringing your face next to the camera, and the other person would be in front of the camera, which is kind of like trying to do a dance while you're also improvising about a character that you don't even know who you are or what the story is. So it's quite unusual. He's his own. He's like a collage artist. He's his own. He's genius. No question about it. It was completely fascinating. But actually, had its rules. A lot of its own rules. I didn't feel free.
Over here. Wait, are you talking?
Terrence Davies.
Oh, Davies. Oh, it's Terrence Davies. Did he talk about movies and directors that he liked? Because he is often referencing older films.
Yeah, well, that Judy Garland film he loves.
Oh,
that,
well, we were talking about... he loves Doris Day. He loves Doris Day musicals, so he loves Young at Heart. But he loves... the film that came up a lot in relation to this was Brief Encounter, I guess. I don't know if that was something that you...
Sure, the Noah Cow... Who was it, David Lean?
David Lean directed. But did you talk about these films or?
I'd seen Brief Encounter before. I didn't rewatch it for this, but yeah, he loves Now Voyager, the Bette Davis movie. Who doesn't? then another thing that he really loved, which I watched, which I thought had really dated personally, was the film, The Heiress, he's obsessed with. Olivia, I mean, I don't know.
The
Sorry.
William Wyler film.
Yeah. I thought Now Voyager is like not dated at all.
Yeah.
But anyway, he loves Now Voyager and The Heiress were two movies that he really, 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 really loves. Yeah.
Okay. He loved Tragic Woman. Well.
Yeah, stories about women going through something dramatic and interesting. That, great drama.
Okay, down here.
Hi, I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
I'm wondering, what was your favorite scene to
Or what was your favorite scene to shoot and what was the hardest?
Favorite scene, singing in the pub. and it was, the idea was that I didn't really know the character Hester hadn't been to pubs before because she's too posh. and so she didn't know the words. And so I was trying to kind of learn the words as the character's trying to learn the words. I love that scene. And Terrence was running around screaming at all the extras with kind of love and passion, going, no, 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 it's not right. And because he, you know, he'd been in the pubs in those days when people sang. And he said, people weren't enthusiastic. We weren't being, all the background artists were not being enthusiastic enough. And he was getting very frustrated with them. But he was kind of conducting them. And and the hardest scene, I don't know. I can't remember that the hardest.
Okay, just have time for a few more. So over here. Go ahead.
Me?
Sure. Oh, why Freddie's with her. So why, I guess, it's interesting that the script is so forthright about Freddie not loving her. So why is he with her?
I can't imagine. She's insufferable. I guess initially, sexual attraction. I mean, isn't that what happens between people? You don't know anybody at first, do you? Unless you spend many, many hours and years getting to know them. You get to know people are often sexual attraction, I think, at first, and a kind of a love, but he just can't give her what she wants. I guess she tries to introduce him to her world a bit, takes him to see cubist paintings, which really pisses him off. He's not interested in what she's trying to show him. And actually, I think she's very interested in his world. She goes with him to the part. You know, she wants to be part of his world. She wants to go beyond just the little life that she's led in art galleries and in her husband's study or wherever she's been. but he's not. He can't. I don't know. I think he's not flexible, and he can't be with her. So initially, I don't know. I think there was a kind of a love, but as he gets to know her, he just I don't know. What do you think? I don't know.
Well, both of the men in the film, in their own way, they want emotion up to a certain point. I mean, he can't deal with emotion. He has that whole speech about
who? Freddie. She's a lot.
Yeah. So he's only so much he can handle. Yeah. have you been surprised by, or you must have been pleased by the response now that the film is getting? It's a very small film. In terms of the release and so the fact that it's now getting these accolades at the end of the year
It's tremendous. Yeah. It means that honors shine a light on Terrence's work, and it means that people will see and hear his work, and that's really important to me, and it's a wonderful thing to happen, because I think more people will hopefully see this little film now.
I think so. Okay. Well, congratulations again, and thank you so much for being here tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. The Pinewood Dialogues at Museum of the Moving Image are made possible by generous support from the Pannonia Foundation. To learn more about the museum, visit www.movingimage.us.